Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys. What's up? Welcome to the Geek Legacy Podcast. I know it's been a very long time, almost a year to the day, I believe. The band is back together. I'm Justin Cavender, and with me, as always, is Mr. Randy Van Dyke and David Edmondson. How are you two doing today?
I am wonderful, thank you.
Fantastic. You look wonderful.
You look fantastic, too.
Thanks. My scenic apartment here in the Death Star.
Yeah, it's like one of them Dubai hotels in space.
It's so tall, you just see the end of the atmosphere and the beginning of space.
It's better than the garage rafters. You know, I'll think of something better that is permanent. But for now, it'll do in a pinch.
But are you going to jump a car out of the window,
yeah,
a la Fast and Furious style?
There you go.
Just got to where it counts.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, how are you, Justin?
I'm good. No complaints.
Back in Southern California.
Yes, and it's amazing. I'm feeling every degree of it. It was warm today.
Well, you were complaining the other day that it keeps raining.
I know, I hate the rain. Dude, I would rather die of thirst than it rain another day. I'm over it.
That's pretty terrible.
Justin Cavender does not express the views of the entire Geek Legacy Podcast. If there's any plague or biblical thing coming down, I'd much rather have rain than die of thirst.
No, after a decade in Seattle, I've had a lifetime of rain, and I don't want another drop. I'm writing a letter to my congressman, and we're going to do something about it.
Who's your congressman?
I don't even know. I don't know, but I will say I am registered to vote in Riverside County. Thank you. The 909, as it were.
I think it's the 951 now. I think they've upgraded.
Yeah.
Sounds fancy.
Yeah,
but how is all of this going to get you access to a weather machine?
I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead. Craigslist.
If you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Yeah. So, what's everyone been up to? Randy, what are you doing?
I've been working a lot, both for the school and finishing up the film that I shot last year.
Ooh, congratulations!
Yeah, which has been a long road. And just today, like I kid you not, an hour ago, I just finished rendering out the last of the visual effects shots for it, which was the last leg of this journey.
What?
Something like 74, 75 visual effects shots. And all the sound is done for it, the music, the 5.1 surround mix. It's going to look and sound like a goddamn movie, and I'm super stoked about it. And, you know, now is a great time to be in post-production because, no productions are shooting because you can't have crowds of people.
Right.
You can't be closer than 6 feet away from somebody. So it is completely shut down the entertainment industry. However...
They're going to need content.
Films like mine that were already shot and like 75% done when all this shit began. This is going to be our time to shine, you know?
They're making it on Freeform.
God damn.
The audience channel.
Yeah.
Which I discovered flipping through the channels the other day. They don't do commercials. It was enjoyable.
Oh, that's cool.
I was watching the movie Fever Pitch, and we were like, well, let's watch the commercial, and then we'll flip to something that doesn't have commercials. And then next thing you know, the movie's over. No commercials. Thanks,
nice.
Audience.
Nice. I've been watching Better Call Saul, and cool. It's like a 90-minute program because of all the commercials, and so it's a bit obnoxious. Yeah, I'm fast-forwarding through it, but the amount of breaks sort of take you out of that immersion, and it sucks. Now, for such an amazing show where I love every character, just like every 10 minutes or so, you're just kind of literally ripped out of that world and have to deal with some obnoxious commercial, and of course... I'm the worst at the remote, and I set it down somewhere. I have no idea where I put it, and I'm digging for it, trying to find it, just screaming at the world. I'm sure there are big problems.
Rookie move, Cam.
I need like a remote boat from Everybody Loves Raymond and just have it right there on my side table there.
I was just going to say, the interesting thing about Better Call Saul, and there's a few other shows like this too, is it actually, like, it'll run for an hour and 20 minutes. It's not like an hour-long show. but I think it's the same amount of content that a traditional hour-long show would be. They just seem to add extra commercials. So it's like all my DVR recordings are like an hour, 18 minutes, hour, 20 minutes, something like that. It's just to accommodate the extra commercials.
I know it sounds crazy now to think that, you know, people used to travel, but Justin and I went on like a 13-day sojourn to the East Coast, and I just watched four seasons worth of Better Call Saul, and you know, now I'm unfortunately caught up, so I have to wait week to week to get my fix.
Yeah. And now we just had the finale on Monday, and it's crazy. I was nervous. In fact, I don't even bite my nails, but I started biting my nails, and I bit this one too short. Now it's kind of like obnoxiously like uncomfortable, you know, where it just like kind of stings a bit. And it was all because of the GD Salamanca cartel.
They ruined everything. As a lifelong nail biter, it's a terrible habit, and it hurts a lot. And if you can stop it now, stop it now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Well, there's no more. I have to wait another year before I can do it again.
They'll grow back.
I'm an episode behind, so if there's anything good that happens in the last one, don't say anything.
I will keep it a secret.
Or give me a spoiler warning and I'll take off.
No. Yeah, Walter White came back and he died again. It was crazy.
It's my favorite show on TV. I love it so much.
Nice.
What about you, Dave?
No, just working, trying to fix up my garage, you know, taking advantage of this time spent in quarantine, and just get a bunch of stuff done around the house, and trying to be the best husband I can be. Which means don't buy a bunch of shit and don't break stuff.
Right.
My wife has the bar set real low.
That's good. A lot of people fell upwards anyway, so you might be able to pull it off.
I am living proof of the failure upwards. Justin works something. He can attest to my failing upwards.
Yeah. Fine young man. Uptown all the way. I haven't said that in like a year. Oh my God. That's awesome.
It's a podcast thing.
Yeah. What a fun little catchphrase.
So what we've been up to, what else have you been up to?
Just Better Call Saul. I've been playing a lot of Call of Duty. I am not good, but I enjoy myself. I'll have like a kill death ratio of like three, I guess, where I get three kills before I die. But then that'll be like a really good match. And then I will sink as low as like 0.4 where I just get murdered. Like the whole thing where there's always a bigger fish. There's always a better player, and I will just get shamed into nothingness. And it's exciting, because especially if I manage to kill that guy that murdered me, man, woman, or child, whoever I'm playing against, it's always refreshing when you get like a revenge kill pops up real big. I'm like, yeah. And like I mute everybody. I don't have any sort of dialogue with any of these players, but I know that every once in a while, I'm like, oh, that guy's swearing at the screen right now.
He's probably yelling at his girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever.
Yeah, and I've been playing with my buddies up in Washington, so that's really cool. Just been a lot of fun. Just a lot of video games and a lot of movie watching. I've watched so many movies in the last, like, 5 weeks. And some of them have been ones that I've seen 1,000 times, like Iron Eagle or Over the Top. And then even something as new as, like Birds of Prey or Jay and Silent Bob reboot, but it's been fun. I mean, we are pretty fortunate in this time to where we have our health, we have our safety, and we have plenty of shit to do around the house. So, and unfortunately, not everyone can say that, but we are the lucky ones.
So they're playing with toys all day.
Yes. Oh, that's another thing I've been doing. I've been taking a lot of photos of toys. I've taken up toy photography.
And nice.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for the inspiration, Twan.
Yeah, I got called out for sucking at posing figures, so I've taken it upon myself to challenge myself to being better.
Yeah, there's nothing more deflating than spending all the time posing these figures and taking pictures and feeling really, really proud, like, oh my God, I can't believe how good I did, and then having some guy come to your desk the next day and be like, you think going forward that Jared could pose the figure? I'm like, what? What's wrong? Oh, the shoulder was forward. I'm like, 80,000 points of articulation and one is wrong and you want to call me to task?
Right. It is funny though, like when you take a photo and then, I mean, you guys know this from just watching something on or making movies in general, is it might look good when you're seeing it, but then in playback, you're like, well, shit, this was there, could have moved this, could have turned that. And I see that all the time. I don't see it when I'm looking through the lens, but I see it after and I'm like, son of a bitch, that was so cool.
And you don't see it until you've completely disassembled everything and put everything away.
Terrible. I'm like, son of a bitch. And a lot of my photos have been outside, and the sun's moving pretty quick. So, like, the lighting's all changed. I'm like, shit, I'll do this again tomorrow. And
start making TikTok videos. That's where the fun's at.
I believe it.
If you ever want to lose a couple hours of your day, just download TikTok.
Yeah. I tried, and it's nothing but like teenage girls dancing and slapping their butts and taking turns dancing. And as a near 40-year-old male, I felt like a total perv.
I stand by my initial statement of you'll kill a couple hours.
Dude, it's an edgy app, man. I'm like, holy shit, dude. I'm on a watch list. I can't be looking at
stuff. Yeah.
That's why I'm like a dirty man, dude. Can't do it.
I have a firm stance on Twitter. I even tweeted out the other day that everyone should follow one porn star on Twitter. Whatever you're into, it could be guy, girl, trans, whatever. I don't care who you do, because there's nothing more fun than just scrolling, and like, oh my god, what is this? it just, and every time it like goes like, ooh, that's nice. It just puts a smile on your face. Okay. You're like 95% of the time it's just regular content, but then all of a sudden like, bam, Lena the plug.
Yep. Instagram's like that for me. There's no nudity, but for work, you know, following different cosplayers and stuff, it's always a real experience when my significant other is 2 feet away from me and I'm flipping through my phone, and all of a sudden there's like a smoking hot cosplayer barely wearing anything or nothing, and it's just kind of like covered by some sort of graphic or whatever, but I'm just like, no, trust me, baby, it's for work.
And it's always the first picture. Like, it's always. All right, we'll play a little game here. Let's load it. First picture.
Yep. It's edgy, bro. I follow goats and cosplayers, and so it's like goat, naked person, goat, naked, naked goat. I was like, okay, my Instagram is terrible. It's like that whole thing where, like, if you were to die and your relatives come over to rummage through your shit just to kind of clean up, it's like, are they going to be surprised when they open up that drawer or that hope chest that you have? It's like, what do you have in there that's gonna surprise everybody? And unfortunately, social media is sort of Pandora's box in a lot of ways, especially now that, like, with Twitter, where if you like something, it shows up on someone's feed even though they don't follow whatever it is that you liked. So you got to be careful about that sort of thing. It's like, why is this on my feed? I don't even know who this person is. And then it's like, oh, so-and-so liked it. It's like, oh, okay, that's what that is.
You got some weird taste.
Let's check this out. Anywho, I guess that's pretty much it for that. Let's see, trolling through the news here. Christmas is canceled this year. For us, that means convention season. Started with Emerald City Comic Con, South by Southwest, moving on through Anime Expo and San Diego Comic-Con. That's one of our biggest ones. We all get together every year. That's huge that's not happening. And we don't even know if there's going to be events throughout the rest of 2020. What are your thoughts on that, Randy, as someone that loves going to the cons?
Well, sick.
Yeah. I don't know. I as much as I love events like Comic-Con, San Diego, and shit, Star Wars Celebration is supposed to be in August. They haven't canceled it yet, but it's got to be right around the corner that they're going to cancel it. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm an antisocial kind of guy, so
this is your podcast from your cave in Afghanistan, right?
I know, right? In an undisclosed location, far off the grid, using a VPN. I love Comic-Con, and I love going, and I love hanging out with you guys. But every once in a while, I like taking a year off. Or, you know, I'll go for like one day or something like that and be completely satisfied. Just because, man, I get tired and overwhelmed by crowds so easily now. And it's a whole different experience for you guys now that you're working in the madness. I can only imagine. Holy shit. But, yeah, for me...
We say that every show. Yeah. Holy shit.
There's no way this is going to come together. This is a total disaster.
For me, I think of it as a good year off, a year to recharge, you know. The thing that I am bummed about the most, though, is the possibility of Celebration not happening, because it's been 5 years since the last Celebration in California, which was 2015 in Anaheim. And
we went to that together.
Yeah. Way. Yeah.
And so we went to your After Dark, weird.
The room sales. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to be missing the most. It's like, oh my God. Just all the cool merchandise stuff.
Yeah. You know? I went to one of those CD room sales, Justin, in Chicago without anybody. And I had no idea what I was doing. So I'm texting Randy. I'm like, so what's the protocol here?
Like a key party, dude. It's a 1970s party.
I felt so weird. Like the first guy I didn't even, the first guy I didn't even negotiate with, he's like, oh yeah, that's 100 for them. I'll just take my money and give me my figures. I felt so weird.
You walk in, you're like, Fidelio.
Yeah. And he's like, here's a Lando. Dude,
I remember that one in California, and we got so hammered. Mr. Van Dyke over there smuggled. He was a bootlegger.
I remember.
Oh man, that was a fun time.
Then I got a tattoo.
And we saw Jared from Subway before everyone found out he was a creep. Yeah, and you got a tattoo. And Randy's due for a tattoo. We gotta pin him down and do it ourselves. Send away for our
kit. when the quarantine lifts, I'm gonna get another one. I just don't know what yet.
Us.
Like holding hands?
Sure.
Like playing Ring Around the Rosie? Like three there of us? Go.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Done.
All right.
We'll all three get it, and then it'll be like us and then like the other two from the back. And then everyone will have their own individual one. And then we can combine like Voltron.
I like it.
Our specific one will light up on our legs or wherever we get it.
There you go.
Man. Give it like UV reactant ink or something like that, so under a black light it'll glow.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about the shows. That's gonna be a real kick to the nuts. Last year was my first year actually working shows, and it was incredible to plan out San Diego Comic Con, just because it's such a huge beast and it takes 5 months to plan out, and just to see it all come together was really, really a lot of fun. But that'll be next year. Comic Con will come back. It's not like it's not gonna happen again. Like Randy, Justin, you said it, how fortunate we are to where we're able to work from home and we're healthy and we have supplies and such. But it has been kind of nice, just being home with my family all the time, not having to like rush home or fight traffic and stuff like that. Do I want this to last much longer? No. And I definitely want it to end soon for my friends who aren't as fortunate as me. But for me personally, it's been kind of nice to be able to get stuff done around the house and be like a homebody for a little bit.
Right. Walk around in your panties.
Right now, actually, I'm in panties, but they're not mine.
What happened to my fun little moo cow one?
Somebody's been rummaging in your drawers.
Yes, the udder fits perfect.
Single udder.
Well, you only have one. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Let's see here. Hollywood, like us, are still trying to figure things out. We've had some video on demand options, but for the most part, movies are just getting pushed back for their theatrical release. A lot of ones that were pretty much all done and ready to go. Quiet Place 2, for example, was supposed to come out like 3 days before the stay-at-home shelter-in-place orders took effect. And it's crazy because so many movie theaters are hurting over times like this. And just off the top here on this list, I have movies that got pushed back because of this. We have Fast and Furious 9, No Time to Die, Mulan, Quiet Place 2, New Mutants, of course, Black Widow, Wonder Woman 1984, Top Gun Maverick, Ghostbusters Afterlife, Morbius, Jungle Cruise, Indiana Jones 5, which who knows when that'll ever be made, The Batman, which is actually coming along pretty good, and then Venom 2.
Carnage.
Yeah, I'm excited. I enjoyed the first one. I've actually watched it like three times, which is weird because I didn't think that would ever be a case. But I think it's fun. It's a fun little romp.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. It's got a pretty good soundtrack too.
Hmm. Dave's just weird.
That's fine. I like it when the gelatin fights the other gelatin on top of the space shuttle at the end of the movie, and then like they become friends and friends become enemy. I don't know. It's fine. I don't think it's bad. I just don't think it's great.
Sure. So what's weird for me, I've come to this realization that Into the Spider-Verse is probably officially my favorite comic book movie. And there was a time when X2 was probably number one. Maybe even the first Iron Man movie, Infinity War. But now it's like pretty far ahead now into the Spider-Verse. I just think that movie set the bar so high. I love everything about it. Love the story, love the music, love the visuals. And nothing, as of right now, nothing can top it. Is there anything on this list that you're just dying to see or really, really looking forward to?
For me, there's two things on the list that really call out to me. No Time to Die. I'm a huge Bond fan, and I was really looking forward to that. Daniel Craig's final Bond movie. And Ghostbusters Afterlife. Oh, my God. I mean, it's not like they're getting canceled. It's not like we're not going to see them. They're just so it's not like this life-shattering thing happening. But that's a pretty big deal for all of these big summer tentpole type of movies just to all get pushed back simultaneously. It's obviously it's never happened before, so it's a hell of a thing to get used to.
Yeah, what's summer going to be like if we're not going to the movies?
For me, it's the two DC comics on there, which I never thought I would say. It's Wonder Woman 1984 and the Batman. I think the Batman's going to be very interesting. I think Matt Reeves is a great director and a great choice. I think that Pattinson's going to just shock us with how great he is as Batman. And if I had to throw a third one in there, I'm just desperately curious about Top Gun Maverick. You know, obviously the first one is a triumph, and I love it to death. And I'm just really, really, I really, really want to see where it's going. And I want, if Scientology is the reason that Tom Cruise looks so good at his age right now, I mean, sign me the fuck up right now. I'm not attracted to men, but he looks so good in Top Gun Maverick. Like, he looks so young and youthful and exuberant. And, you know, if he's getting plastic surgery, good on him. He's getting the good kind because he looks fantastic. And if it's just Scientology and clean living, man, I am doing it wrong. I need to do what he's doing. What about you, Justin? What are you excited about or sad about? It's not coming.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Wonder Woman, I'm really looking forward to. Okay. New Mutants. I'm really looking forward to that one.
That's the best.
Yeah, how about that one? No, I'm pretty much in the same boat as you guys, man. I am definitely pumped for the new Batman movie. I think that'll be a blast. And Quiet Place 2, I was looking forward to that one. I really enjoyed the first one. So, yeah. I mean, these are all really cool movies. I planned on watching each and every one of these movies, so it's just going to be a small little hitch in my giddy up till we get there, that's all.
Yeah, Jungle Cruise looked a lot of fun too, and I'm a big mark for The Rock. I love everything he's in. Sure. I think off this list, I was obviously going to see Fast and Furious 9, but it wasn't something that I was looking forward to. I know No Time to Die, you know, I should be excited for, but I just have such a terrible taste in my mouth from Spectre. And I just have a bad feeling that Craig's going to, like, just phone this last one in, and I don't know. And then, obviously, New Mutants, you know. Yeah. And I don't see scary movies because I'm a weenie.
So, one movie that none of us have mentioned, Indy 5. I mean, that's got a dubious future as it is, because who knows if Harrison Ford's going to be up for, or, like, physically able to begin production whenever that does kick in. But, man, I am an old-school Indiana Jones fan, and I love those first three movies. But even I'm at the point where I'm like, do we need a fifth one?
It's interesting you say that, Randy, because, like, Tim, I was watching – I watched the first three last week or so, and Indy is a youthful character. You know, he doesn't have to be, you know, in his 20s, but, you know, he's running and punching and shooting and stuff like that, and – I think a big problem with Crystal Skull is his age, and I don't think old Indy is as interesting as young Indy. And I think that if they want to continue the Indiana Jones franchise, they need to go back to what made it better. This fun, fast action film, start to finish, nonstop romp. And I would even go so far as to say that Spielberg may no longer be the director to make an Indiana Jones film. You know, right. no one's gonna debate that he is in a league entirely of his own is probably the greatest American filmmaker, you know, of the last 50 years. But you know, the movies he's making now are not Raiders of the Lost Ark and Last Crusade or even Temple of Doom level.
Right.
You know, he's making movies that, you know, he's shooting movies different, he's lighting movies different, and he's lost what made the first Indiana Jones movie special, I think.
His cinematic storytelling has grown up as he has, and now it's in the golden years. So it's like his storytelling has aged as he has, and he's telling the stories that matter to him, what's interesting to him.
Yeah, the day,
exactly. Very, very deep character-based things. The days of his swashbuckling past are in the past. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and I agree that it does need new lifeblood and start at the top from director down, you know. And that was before all the shutdowns happened. That was one of the more recent announcements that was put out there, was that Spielberg was backing down as director. And I forget who they had tentatively named as taking over the helm.
It wasn't McQuarrie. I'm trying to remember who it was. No. It doesn't matter. I mean, I would be excited tomorrow if the announcement came out that Indiana 5 or, you know, Indiana Jones, whatever, you know, and they recast, you know, insert person here as Indiana mm-hmm. Jones. Obviously there are people that I would like more than others. But I think the potential is out there to tell Indiana Jones stories. You know, you can, if you want to bring him up to the modern day, that's kind of hard. Indiana Jones to me is always like a relic of the past, you know.
I like him beating Nazis and science still being like, you know, a fun little avenue to explore. Like, it could be, is it magic? Is it science? Is it, you know, some religious artifact? I think in an era where we don't have all the answers, it's a lot more exciting.
20s through 40s are the sweet spot, you know, depending how young or old you want to make Indiana Jones. But basically, that is such a wonderful time where the world was becoming smaller because we were able to travel it quicker, you know.
Right.
So people were starting to travel more and see more and experience more, and all these other cultures and all these other past civilizations became so much more exciting and interesting to people around the world. So, you know, and obviously there was so much going on around the world at that time period. It makes for good storytelling. Indiana Jones in the present day, that's we already have that. It's Tomb Raider, you know.
Right. So what setting would you like to see it in? We've seen a jungle, we've seen a desert, we've seen a tomb. What is what's left?
Snow, ice.
Huh. Well, what period would you want to see? You know, because you mentioned the sweet spot 20s to 40s, but if we set a 20 to 40 and recast it, then it's a reboot. You know, yeah. I'd rather see like a sequel and set it in like the 60s or 70s and just make it, you know, a younger Indiana Jones.
I've always gone with the idea that I feel like it could work the same way that the James Bond movies do, where you just keep recycling in younger actors. Now, granted, it's not all set in the 60s in the Connery era of Bond. But for me, Indiana Jones goes hand in hand with Nazis. They are like his arch nemesis, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I love that.
It's like, I want to keep it in the 30s era and the 40s era, I think is fantastic.
And you like the clothes and you like, you know, the weapons and the cars and the buildings. You're a sucker for that era.
Now the problem is, would it get repetitive? Would they eventually kind of run out of unique stories to tell within that time frame? Maybe, you know? So, you know, progressing things forward into the 50s, 60s, 70s, it could be worth exploring. But if they're going to do that, if they're going to explore with these later eras, do it while Harrison Ford is still alive. Do it with an older version of Indy. And rather than just reboot him as a younger character in a new era, go ahead and continue that storyline out if we're going to go into the later eras. Otherwise, if they're going to recast, you might as well reboot, even if it's like a soft reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that.
But yeah, with all these delays, you know, that's asking the question, you know, what's happening to movie theaters? They are not open right now. They are not paying their rent, as it were. And, you know, there were some really cool art house theaters that we had in Orange County. And, you know, Randy and I saw Tron re-released at one of them once, and that was a lot mm-hmm. of fun. And it's just really sad when you think about these family-owned theaters that probably won't be around much longer. And now even the big business ones like your AMCs and your Regals, you know, they're suffering too.
Yeah, what some of the smaller art house theaters are doing, at least the ones that I follow through social media, they're still doing like live streaming events and watch parties, and they'll kind of turn those opportunities into fundraising things, because a lot of those art house movies, their bread and butter is people coming in to watch all these like cult movies, and not like cult, but I mean, so just like a bunch of old classic movies that they'll play on the weekends and midnight screenings and stuff like that, and it's all repeat customers coming in pretty much. Like I said, that's their bread and butter for these places. So by having a medium for these fans of theirs, these super fans, customers of theirs, to be able to still financially support them and keep them going, to guarantee that it'll still be around in a physical form when we come out of the other side of this thing, I think that's a way to guarantee that, or at least try to ensure that they're not going to close down. I know not all of them have that fan base will be able to pull it off, but that's what I see happening with a couple.
Right. Well, that's good. What are those Fathom events? Those are always fun ways to go. I mean, yeah, you usually go into a big like AMC or something like that to watch like an older movie, but I had never seen a Philadelphia Story before, and I saw that through a Fathom event. That was like one of my favorite movies ever now. And cool. Yeah, it's just really cool that these old films like still exist in some form or another, and we're able to watch them. That's crazy. What about the big boys, Dave? Your AMCs and your Regals. What's the plan for those?
So I mean, AMC is an interesting case because the Wanda Group, who is a Chinese investment group who also owns part of Legendary Pictures. So, you know, there's a lot of political maneuvering. They bought AMC as like a kind of a way to ingratiate themselves with the Communist Party in China. And the person who did it has since been exiled from the Communist Party in China. And so their investment in AMC theaters is kind of in question. But I think for the big boys, what's going to happen is, you know, Netflix and Amazon, who are doing really well right now with their streaming because we're all stuck at home, have been wanting to get into the theatrical game. And rather than build their own theaters, if something happens to AMC, you know, they might be able to swoop in and purchase AMC or purchase, you know, Regal or Edwards or, you know, United Artists if the Regal Corporation splits up. And, you know, they'll be able to buy hundreds of theaters in one fell swoop, and they have the money to do it. You know, they'll be able to theatrically show all of their prestige films that they want to have awards consideration. They can do fun little Netflix and chill events. You know, a lot of them have reclining seats, I'm just saying. You know, they can have, you know, just think how cool it would be, I know Marvel series aren't on Netflix anymore, but like if they drop a series and you go to a theater and for a couple bucks you could watch the entire run of it, you know.
But wasn't there like some sort of rule where studios can't own movie theaters?
There used to be. So it used to be there's three wings of film production. There's production, distribution, and exhibition. So you make the movie, you sell the movie, you show the movie. And it used to be you could only control two of them. However, that rule, I forgive me, I don't remember the name of the actual the law. But
call it the Edmondson law.
The Edmondson law. that no longer applies.
Oh.
And to avoid, because, you know, back in the day, movie theaters used to have one screen. And so, you know, Walt Disney owned the movie theater, he's not going to show an MGM film.
And he's like, we're showing Snow White again.
Yeah. It was made for a good reason, but, you know, we've kind of outgrown that now that we have multiplexes.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's crazy. And you were naming off different ones, you know, like United Artists, Regal, AMC, Century, that's another one too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. It's crazy.
Yeah, Regal Edwards, United Artists, they formed the Regal Group. But there's talks that they may dissolve the group and go back into three separate entities. And then they would focus on, you know, United Artists are kind of older, smaller theaters. They would focus on the more like awards films. And then, you know, Regal being kind of like the main megaplex, they would be where like you would go see like Avengers and Avatar 2 and stuff.
Gotcha. I remember going to United Artists and like the 80s, there would be this Will Rogers Institute commercial, and then some poor team member would have to go through with like this cup and collect money that you donate to it. I mean, it's all a good cause, but.
Or they'd sell like little pins or something like that. Same thing. Like they'd go up to the front of the theater.
Dude had the pins. Yeah.
It's like take 50 cents out of the $300 you charge for my ticket and popcorn.
Yeah. I think it's always easier if it's just rounding up the transaction when it comes to donations. That's the key. It's like, okay, well, the total is whatever, $14.52. Do you want me to give you 48 cents back, or do you just want to roll that up and, you know, donate the change? That's the real cash cow.
I don't want your coins. I'm just going to throw them in the trash anyways.
I don't want coins. Jingle and jangle.
That's not a quarter. I don't want it.
I know, right? You're like, oh, this will be good for the vacuum at the car wash. Score. It's so funny how that works. That's why there's always a penny shortage, because people just don't know what the fuck to do with them. They just throw them in their ashtray, or they're in their seats or whatever. It's a pain in the ass coin.
So it's interesting that not all movies got delayed. That, you know, some went to, you know, premium VOD, you know, like, you know, Trolls did and stuff like that. Do you foresee any of these movies that we just talked about, you know, going the VOD route? I mean, obviously, you know, anything that's projected to make $500 million would be suicide to go via premium VOD. What if you had to pick something off this list that would go PVOD? What do you think it would be?
Ooh. A scary movie, Quiet Place, would be a good VOD, because yeah, it's a scary movie you could watch at home. You know, you don't have to worry about an obnoxious person hindering your experience. But, like, you know, when all these movies did go VOD, they were like $20, and it's like, okay, that's fair. If I would have gone to the theater, I would have paid more than that with me and my significant other, not to mention concession. So at the end of the day, that seems like a fair price, but at the same time, I got a 4K version of Birds of Prey for $13 when I went 2 weeks before that, it was going to be $20 to stream video on demand. So it's like, are you asking the consumer to support the industry and pay that $20 and get nothing back, short of a 2-hour movie, or what? You know, that's a big ask, especially when people don't have jobs or they need to be, you know, tightening the money belt, as it were. But, like, I can tell you right now, for the sake of Star Wars or Avengers, rather than in an era where there's obnoxious people screaming and yelling at the screen and cheering, I think I would have paid, you know, upwards of $30 to just sit there and watch it on my big TV at home. You know, I think that's an interesting concept.
Are you still encountering obnoxious people in the movie theater?
Only on big movies like that.
And only like an opening night, opening weekend.
Yeah, yeah. If I would have gone to the first show on a Monday or Sunday or something like that, it wouldn't have been like that. But I mean, I realize that some people like that energy that's coming from the theater. Like, you know, we've talked about 100 times when it comes to Star Wars. The first time we watch a new Star Wars movie, whether it's good or bad, we usually love it because of the energy that's in the room, and it's Star Wars, and that wave of nostalgia that hits you. But I'm not going to have that when I go watch fucking Jungle Cruise or New Mutants.
No.
That energy doesn't exist. That movie needs to wow the fuck out of me for me to enjoy it. Yeah. And so there is something to be said about that theater experience. But at the same time, I don't know. I could just have popcorn in 90 seconds in my microwave, and I could have all the soda that I want, and I could just enjoy it in my living room. Yeah. But I don't know. As of right now, I have not come across either a price or a movie that I've been willing to commit to video on demand.
Sure. And I think the theatrical experience for me is the absence of distractions. Like, if I'm sitting at home watching anything, I have my phone next to me. And even if I'm completely engrossed in something, you know, I'm always occasionally checking it or playing a quick game of something or seeing my email or my Facebook or my Twitter, to where if you're in the movie theater, you're kind of, you know, for better lack of a better word, held hostage. You know, it should be distraction free. Obviously, you know, some places, you know, you may encounter a douchebag who lights up his phone or something like that. But for me, I like it because it forces me to actually pay attention, which seems silly, but yeah. And I'm part of the AMC, you know, AMC Plus members, and so they all have the reclining seat. So, you know, I hope that the movie theaters come back, because I'm a big fan of the theatrical experience. You know, Quiet Place, the first Quiet Place made $340 million. And so, you know, I think New Mutants, I could see that going to like Disney Plus or something like that. Mm. Just because, you know, Disney didn't pay anything for that movie. You know, that's a fun
right movie. Right. And Quiet Place being a horror movie, it is a, I think out of all the movies on this list, aside from New Mutants, it's probably one of the lower budgeted films on this list. So it has the earning potential to grow exponentially box office wise. I just mean for the sake of it being a horror movie and me being in an intimate setting like my living room with all the lights off, that could be a much more enjoyable experience than people talking behind me in a movie theater.
Yeah, because I mean, Fast and Furious 9, Mulan, Wonder Woman 1984, you know, these are probably $1 billion films, you know.
Right.
I could see each of them making that kind of movie. I think the buzz on Mulan and just how great it looks, I think it'll push it over. But what about you, Randy? What movie, do you see anything on this list that would make you think it could go on like a premium VOD service?
I think what Justin said really kind of hit it for me, like Quiet Place 2. Horror movies, I feel like, work really well in a home environment and don't necessarily need to be seen on a big screen to get the impact. But I mean, just about everything else, it seems like a big theatrical experience, like Wonder Woman, Ghostbusters, all that stuff. It's just Batman, of course. I don't want to watch those for the first time on my little TV at home, even though my little TV isn't that little. It's just like, I want the theatrical experience. So, and maybe it's just because I don't have as much of an affinity for horror movies as I do the other genres. Maybe that's why I kind of feel like, you can kick that one to VOD. but I think that makes sense, though, to me. That's how most people consume those movies. The horror movies, they don't make a whole lot theatrically at the beginning, usually. Where they have their legs is, you know, in home video. So, yeah. So I think...
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, plus A Quiet Place is one of the few films on here that doesn't have like an ancillary revenue stream. You know, it's making all of its money off of the movie. You know, there aren't Quiet Place action figures. There aren't Quiet Place Happy Meal toys.
Yeah, Quiet Place the flamethrower.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, all of their money's coming from the film, so it really wouldn't be a huge aftermarket loss to where, you know, like, Ghostbusters, they're going to make action figures for Ghostbusters, and people are much more likely to buy action figures from a highly successful movie that they went and saw in a movie theater than something they just saw on television.
Right.
What's the most embarrassing thing you guys have watched in the last year, or since we've last podcast? What is a show that you watch regularly, or is a movie that you watch that you, after it was done, you're like, yeah, well, I can't believe I'm watching this. Do you have anything like that? I know Randy's been watching all these terrible B-horror movies.
So, yeah, do you want to go first?
I'm trying to think, because, I mean, I've watched some pretty terrible movies, but I don't know if I regret it or if I'm embarrassed about it. They're just bad. They're fun. They're old. Like, a lot of old canon films from the 80s, like the Golden Globus shit. I watched Ninja 3, The Domination. And we had a watch party. And it was me and a bunch of the people that made the Bloodsucker Jones movies. And we were all on a group chat. And we all started the movies at the same time because it was streaming on Amazon. Holy crap. It was so much fun. We ended up doing it one more time. We've been trying to get together again since then. But yeah, we would just find these old, random, terrible movies. And I'm not embarrassed at all.
Have you seen the canon documentary on Netflix?
Have I seen the? Oh yes, yeah, yes, fascinating. And you know, they're trying to, like, the Canon Films name and logo is trying to come back. It's like not the same. Yeah, it's not any of the same team that brought us the original movies.
Not the Falcons or whatever.
Yeah.
So three and four.
Oh my god.
I mean, and one and two, I guess.
Okay, so one of my favorite, I didn't watch this recently, but it's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. It's a canon film. The King Solomon's Mines, the first Alan Quatermain adventure with Richard Chamberlain and Sharon Stone. Yeah. It was so good. It was such a low-budget Indiana Jones knockoff, but goddamn, the first one was good. The second one was mediocre at best, but yeah. I don't know. I have a soft spot for those, like, practically grindhouse, really cheap 80s movies. Another pair of movies that I watched in a single day. I watched, again, Canon Films, Breakin' and Breakin' 2. I've never fucking seen it before. I always thought Breakin' 2 was a fucking joke. I didn't know.
They tell you at the end of the credits on the first one, like Ice-T's rapping, and he's like, and stay tuned for Breakin' 2, The Electric Boogaloo.
You know, they came out in the same year. They had to shoot those probably back to back. That's crazy to think that the first one was going to be so popular that they were immediately going to release a second one.
And it's one of the few movies that Shooter McGavin is a good guy in that movie.
It's just crazy. I had no idea it was a real movie. I thought it was just one of those things, like an urban legend, you know, Electric Boogaloo. It's a fucking thing, and it was really enjoyable. I had a lot of fun watching it.
The best is when they think that they're gonna win this little dance off, and then all of a sudden that crazy girl jumps into the mix and she starts getting all up in Special K's face and dancing, and they're like put to shame. It's like, oh shit, that girl just brought her A game, and you guys are like B plus, so you're done.
That's failure. Nice.
And you know, Van Damme's in the first one too. He's dancing on the beach.
The beach, yeah.
that gif you always see.
I've seen gifs of it before, but I'd never actually seen the movie that it came from. And I was like, I immediately recognized the scene as soon as I saw it. I'm like, oh man. I feel like a movie or something, like an inside joke. I know.
That's like when you were a kid and you're watching old movies and you're hearing like Looney Tunes jokes. And you're like, holy shit, that's in Looney Tunes. It's like, no, dude, they got that from this. Now you're seeing pop culture references in movies again. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Nice. What about you, Justin? You watched anything questionable integrity?
I've plowed through like 17 seasons of Project Runway during this quarantine. And I have to say, I'm a bit of a fashion aficionado. Like, I always call who's winning. And who the top three, the bottom three, and who's winning the competition. I am on point when it comes to that show. I could easily be a judge.
Nice.
I'm not necessarily embarrassed by it, but I enjoy it.
Speak your truth. You shouldn't be embarrassed. None of these things we should be embarrassed about. It's just fun to talk about. You know, we always talk about like, oh yeah, we watched this movie or this movie, this movie, and we always talk about the good stuff, and then we're like, and we watched a lot of trash too.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. But I've been watching a lot of stuff on Netflix and Prime that I wouldn't normally give too much thought about. I'm just kind of going through like what's available and watching things, and it doesn't matter if I'm watching like Jaws: The Revenge or Over the Top or Wizard, whatever. It's all stuff that I enjoy, and I realize that they're terrible, but it's a guilty pleasure, and I'm okay with that.
Nice.
How about you, David? Are you watching Tiger King or anything?
I did watch Tiger King. I have two. I kind of went on a bender for Netflix documentaries, and one of them is this Flat Earth documentary where it's like the two main Flat Earthers.
Can't do it.
The whole time I'm watching it, like Netflix is like giving them like the time of day, like almost like legitimizing them. And it wasn't until the last like 3 minutes that it finally comes into play, because the whole documentary they're talking about, like, we're going to do this experiment and this experiment and this experiment and this experiment. And then at the very end, it ends with like the main guy saying like, and until I see proof that Flat Earth is wrong, I'm never going to believe it. And like perfect editing, it fades to black and it's like, 2 days later, and it's these flat earthers doing an experiment, and they completely prove that the earth is round. What was fascinating about it was there's like these two like main flat earther guys, and like they have like this rivalry now. And so like one of them thinks the other one's like a government robot that's replaced the guy. People are just insane. Like it's like next level. Like you can't believe just how crazy they are. It's almost entertaining to watch. And so they're interviewing like these actual scientists and like astronauts during it. And this one guy tries to prove, you know, the Earth is flat by using these mirrors and these lasers, and it's not working. And so they're interviewing this scientist guy. And he's like, yeah, because they're aiming from point A to B, and if the Earth was flat, they would touch. But since they don't touch, there's something in the way. Oh, it's the Earth. and it's just funny, this in the absence of truth and fact, that these people are just such firm believers in everything. And it's so crazy. That the people like this exist in 2020 on this planet. And so, yeah, there was that. And then, you know, I watched some terrible reality shows, you know, like Teen Mom and Young and Pregnant and stuff like that. So I'm not embarrassed. I've been having a lot of stuff on in the background. You know, I've been working weird hours. So, you know, if I'm out in my office and like 1 a.m. or something, I'll put on Netflix and just kind of, hey, there's a cat.
Yeah.
I'll put on Netflix and just see what the algorithm chooses for me.
Yeah.
I also watched The Circle on Netflix. That was a fun. If you want to watch some trash reality television, it's a Netflix original. It's about like six people who live in a house and they never interact with each other. It's kind of like a social experiment. And so they just interact via The Circle, which is basically like Siri. And they do all these crazy like games and stuff like that. And the whole goal is, you know, some people are pretending to be who they are, but some people are just pretending to be someone completely different. And at the end of this, you know, experiment, you pick who you want to win. You know, you just based on your conversations and your actions with these people, you choose who you want to give. I think it's like $100,000 prize. You choose the person you think deserves $100,000.
Can you pick yourself?
I don't believe you could pick yourself. No. And it was just fascinating because like one guy was playing as his girlfriend. And so it was just weird to see. And then she had to flirt as her with another guy. And he was flirting as his girlfriend. It was just a bizarre show, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Were you happy with who won?
I can't even tell you when. I don't even remember anymore. Oh, yeah, I was happy who won. The guy who won was like this guy, like episode one. You're like, who is this fucking douchebag? And then like he ended up, you learn that he's actually like a really good guy. So he loves his mommy. I'm a sucker for anyone who loves his mom.
Okay. I love your mom. She's nice.
Yeah. Thanks. She asks about both of you all the time.
We're good.
She's like, they need masks.
I do. I need masks. I need a cloth one. Well, I have like a Tim the Toolman Taylor kind of fucking mask where it's like on your face and like just tight.
Big old like respirator kind.
Yeah, and it's got like a, you know, that fun filter thing in the front. Versus like Robin a Stagecoach kind of mask. I think if I were going to the grocery store, I would much rather have a cloth bandana type just to be a little bit more comfortable. But
well, I'll bring you one. Yeah, she made me some Giants ones, some Star Wars ones, some like just plain fabric ones just in case I decided I wanted to not be peacocking.
I would appreciate that.
Then I will bring it.
Thank you.
I've got like one of those neoprene ones with little vents on it that you're supposed to wear like when you're training for to go to like the high altitude stuff. It reduces the airflow. Not at all for get out.
It's funny. I picture you in like a World War II gas mask.
No, I'm not done yet. So it starts with that's one of the one that I wear out because it's the most comfortable and it's the least menacing of the bunch that I've got. But I've also got four of like these big old respirators with big yellow filter things on either side that I used in the movie. And to go with those four respirators, I have full head to toe hazmat suits. Goggles, gloves, booties, and everything. And then I've got a current, it's not even military, I think it's like law enforcement issue gas mask where like this much of your face is open, kind of. It's got a big face shield and just this part is covered, and it's got these two big hoses coming out of the back of it. And it's scary as hell. And that was part of a costume, but it actually works, and I have filters that I can hook into it. And then I have an Israeli gas mask, and I have a Cold War era Russian gas mask. I have a Cold War era chemical suit, like a Chernobyl looking, like head to toe, just like rubbery, Soviet made. Suit. All these are just leftovers from the movie. So I'm like, I didn't realize I was one of those preppers when I was buying props and costumes for this movie, but it turned out I was. Yeah, I did not end up in a bad position as far as that goes. But that being said, I don't have anything that doesn't look like I want to go out and murder people on the perch. Because every time I put on my main mask, which I've fashioned some filter material to cover those little vent holes to actually make it a functional mask. But every time I put that on, I look like I'm going to go participate in the perch.
Do you have like fog up issues? Do the eyes fog up at all or no?
No, the one that I wear when I have to go into work and when I have to go out shopping and that kind of thing, I choose not to wear the goggle component with it. So it's just this got part.
You look silly, Justin.
He's got like the who's the bad guy in fucking Mad Max Fury Road?
Yeah. Dude, okay. So one of the guys I work with, he 3D printed one of those, like his like grills metal thing as his mask for going out. And I am going to see if I can show you guys through the camera here.
Through the internet.
Dude, that's awesome.
How badass is that?
That's terrifying. Those choppers. That's incredible.
I want to make one that looks like Darth Vader's mouthpiece.
That'd be cool. I like the hazmat suit in 10 Cloverfield Lane that she makes out of the shower curtain and like the 2-liter bottle of soda. I think that's really cool. It's got like a little rubber ducky painted on the side of the shower curtain. Looks pretty rad.
Believe it or not, I have not seen that.
Oh man, you should check it out. Change your life. Well,
you know why I avoided it? Because I never saw the second Cloverfield movie. Because isn't that the third one?
That is the second one.
Yeah, 10 Clover Lane is the second one. Cloverfield Paradox is the third one.
That's right. Okay.
And you should not watch that one.
No, you can skip it. And
the third one is on Netflix, but the second one isn't.
Correct. I it's one of my favorite movies, and it would mean a lot to me if you watched it.
All right. Well, in that case, I'm just going to watch it just because you said so.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's very, very nice of you.
That's a good one. It's like, come over here, Chicago. We did a fun podcast on Don't Be Crazy. It was good. Just check it out. You can like and subscribe and hit the bell.
and every other obnoxious catchphrase.
Holy shit. I was watching a YouTube video the other day, and before it even started, there was so many things that they asked me to do. I'm like, buddy, I don't even know you. I'm not going to be subscribing and clicking no bell. You gotta wow me. Let's see what you got.
Well, it's a problem. YouTube makes it so hard for creators nowadays. They don't care about creators anymore.
Oh, man. I saw an article about the life of the influencer. The influencer economy is tanking fast.
Oh, no. I feel so terrible for those people who do nothing and are total assholes.
I mean, there's something to be said. Like, I am definitely envious of the 8-year-old kid that is making $1 million on YouTube videos. They're a better person than me when it comes to being an entrepreneur, and I'm impressed. But at the same time, I'm okay if these people have to go out and get real jobs.
Except the Shirley Temple King, that little kid. He's no place.
I mean, it's okay to have honest work, which could be anything from food service, custodial service, retail, whatever. I don't care. It's all, you could be a goat herder for all I care. That's honest work. And I am not going to lie. I had a ridiculous smile on my face when I was reading this article. Not that I want to wish bad on anyone. I just found it funny that there's an industry where people want all these things for nothing are now struggling.
Yeah. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of people.
Ain't that the truth?
Have you seen the Shirley Temple King, Randy?
I have not, no.
It's like the most adorable like 9-year-old boy who only reviews Shirley Temples. And he goes to restaurants and like he reviews the Shirley Temple and they're all like 60 seconds. And they're like, he's like an Instagram guy. And he went on the Ellen DeGeneres show and everything. And that's his whole shtick. He's strictly just, I like the Shirley Temple. But he went from like 300 followers to like 90,000 in like minutes.
That's awesome.
like he had this video and everyone was like, I like this kid. I'm gonna follow this kid.
That's great. I haven't had a Shirley Temple Randy since I was like 8 years old.
Yeah, I haven't had one since childhood either. I don't even know. I don't even know what to expect.
Oh man, but all these nice people that are like, hey dude, I'll take a photo and put it on Instagram if you let me stay at your hotel for free. And it's like, yeah, dude, I don't think so. You got to pay like everybody else.
Yeah. Our hotel's closed anyways.
Bunch of yahoos. I don't know, man. The Vegas mayor was talking about.
I was just going to bring her up.
She's like, yeah, dude, we'll open up. We'll see.
On Anderson Cooper, she's like, oh, so you want to open the casinos? No, I want people to come and like go to the shows. You want to open the theaters? And he's like, yeah, and go to the sporting events. You want to open the sporting event? He's like, no, yeah. I want to open the hotels. You want to open the hotel?
Ooh, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
I am curious, though. Like, let's just fast forward a year from now, and let's say that everything is open. You know, it has been deemed safe to step out. Are people still apprehensive? Are they nervous? Are you still going to go to these big conventions? Are you still going to go to baseball games, basketball games, whatever? What is your take on that?
A year from now, it's hard to tell. What I can speculate on is a little bit of the more upcoming future. And for example, the school that I work at, we're looking at the fall semester, which would normally begin in August. And they're already making decisions now to pretty much decide that, look, we're going to go online only because we don't want to risk having in-person classes. That's through the end of this calendar year. That will have shut us down for over nine or almost nine whole months of the year, if not more. But anyway, that's just, it's wild to think about that they may not convene and have normal classes until spring. And regardless of whether we have normal classes in August or the following January, we're going to have to go through such strenuous, because in my department, we teach film production and TV production. We put equipment in people's hands. We, all of our classrooms are all computer labs with 25 stations, and we have TV control rooms with tons of surfaces that people are touching and pushing buttons and hitting switches and doing things. It's like we have to prepare for the contingency that if we do come back, we are going to have to sterilize everything in the classrooms, all the pieces of gear that they touch after a lab or a studio class, in between every single class. And we just don't have the manpower for it. Not to mention, you know, we're going to be spending thousands upon thousands of dollars on cleaning equipment. But it's one of those things, because we are a state school, it is a government institution. There's funding for it, but at the same time, their whole motivation behind it is they're worried about liability. That if somebody gets sick because they touched a camera that somebody else who was sick touched earlier in the day, and we didn't do our job disinfecting it, that they're going to sue the school. And they are so worried about liability that they're willing to push things back and keep people working from home or keep classes going online just to prevent liability issues.
Right. That's crazy.
And that's, I think, when you look at big events like Comic-Con, or you look at even sporting events and stuff like that, I know people are anxious to get back out there and do things, but if you look at it from a legal or a liability standpoint, it's like, okay, let's say one hotel casino decides to open back up in Vegas, and because of that, everyone's going to flock to that one because, oh my God, it's going to feel like normal again. Let's say it's the Flamingo, and everybody flocks to the Flamingo. So follow me on this train of thought here, this tangent. All right. So they're at the craps table at the Flamingo, and somebody touches some infected dice. Next thing you know, 12 people are sick, and they're going to point their fingers. Well, you know, had you not opened up before everybody else did, we wouldn't be in this position. It's your fault. You know, give us money. So
waiver.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. It might come down to something like that, where people have to sign liability waivers, releases, that kind of thing, before walking into someplace public, which is just, it boggles my mind. And I think we're going to feel that for more than a year.
What would be interesting, too, is if, you know, you knowingly putting yourself in danger, you know, is there going to be some sort of loophole with your insurance? Like, no way, man, fuck off. You put yourself in danger. We're not going to pay for this.
Yeah, there needs to be some form of personal responsibility that we need to enact, I think, especially with these places opening up before, you know, most people think is a good idea. My big concern with all of this is that it sets the precedent that, you know, we can shut the country down if something else happens. You know, there's so many things. You know, I don't know if you guys know where we're supposed to be tomorrow. You know, we're supposed to be at Disneyland tomorrow. I have a reservation for 5 lightsabers for tomorrow at Disneyland. You know, I never thought Disneyland was going to close. And then when they closed, that was kind of like the first big domino. And, you know, I'm just afraid that, you know, 5 years from now when something else happens like this, you know, we're just going to just go back into lockdown mode and stuff like that, because, you know, we've done it before and we know what needs to be done to be doing it. And that's my big fear, is that this is just going to be kind of like the new norm every like 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's scary.
Well, and here's another interesting way to look at it, and this is gonna sound like I'm one of those conspiracy theorists.
Oh, flat earth alert.
No, but look at it this way. I mean, if you And granted, this has taken the entire world by the short and curlies. But this could be a weapon of terrorism in the future too. You know, really something really gnarly in a country that you want to destabilize, like one of the most well-known first world countries, us, you know, it could absolutely be weaponized in the future. And, you know, what does that look like?
Some scary stuff. I know that I read an article last night that I found fascinating. And that was that 60% of the personnel aboard the Theodore Roosevelt aircraft carrier tested positive, but had no symptoms. Like, they felt fine. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really scary is these like silent carriers, right? Where they have no idea that they're infected, and then they are, you know, going to the movie theater or going to Disneyland, and then all of a sudden someone that has, you know, high risk, mm-hmm. you know, people we know and love are now sick and dying. And that's terrifying.
But that's, no, you're absolutely right. That's some scary stuff. And that's why, you know, my approach to like when I do have to go on campus and not work remotely, you know, I got my rubber gloves on and I got my mask on. and I have to treat everybody as if, you know what, everybody, no matter how clean they look, he's infected, she's infected, they're all fucking infected, you know.
Literally the Grinch with a 39 and a half foot pole, and no one would even think twice about it.
Yeah, the conspiracy theorists are having a field day, you know, because I guess there was like 40 different countries that had like government toppling coups in the works, or like mass protests and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden this disease happened where everyone had to go home. I mean,
no clues today. It's too dangerous.
I'm not the guy that's thinking that's true. I'm just reporting what I read on the weird part of the internet.
We appreciate your effort, but it's just too dangerous to be outside right now. So just go home. You can have to overthrow the government some other day.
We'll coup tomorrow.
That's rad. That's like someone go back and get a shitload of dimes. Kind of level.
What in the wow. What's going on here?
Oh, geez. It is so great to be back talking to you guys. I missed this so much.
I've missed it too. It's nice.
Oh, can't wait to be in person again around a table. Yeah. That'll be fun.
It is a lot nicer to talk to Justin when we don't have to think about digital events and Studio Ghibli and other things. It's good to talk about the stuff that matters.
If I get my 3D printer, I'm going to print you guys all obnoxious looking masks.
I insist. Dude.
I want like fucking elephant dark man tusks and shit. I think that'd be cool.
Ooh, like Lando's? Like Lando's thing in Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, that's cool. Now we're talking.
Or Darth Malgus's mask, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking Darth Malgus would be really cool. Yeah. I saw a great picture online, and it was like, in the absence of crowds, all the mermaids have returned to Disneyland. And it was like a picture from the 60s with all the mermaids over by the submarine ride.
That's rad, dude. Holy shit. You know what? Most of us love coffee table books, and it would be really cool to have a coffee table book of Disneyland like through the decades. I think that'd be pretty rad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the most fun thing I did when I worked at Anaheim.com was to get like the old archival footage of like Disneyland and like the black and white photos of rides that don't exist anymore and share those. And
yeah, that's cool.
I just found when I was cleaning my garage, I had a keychain from the Skyway.
Nice.
It was like one of the little cabins on like
the little bucket things.
Yeah, a little bucket. That's kind of cool.
That was fun, especially when you went through the Matterhorn. That was my favorite part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always get scared because you go up, and you go up.
Yeah. It speeds up when it hits the nodule. Yeah. Once it passes through and it dips down for a second, yeah, that's always cool.
It was such a gentle ride, but I would freak out that the door is all of a sudden inexplicably just going to fly open, and as if it were like an airlock being open, I'd somehow get sucked out of it. It was a completely irrational fear, but I had that as a kid.
Well, I always thought that when you got to the top of the arc, you know, where the motors were, that like all of a sudden you weren't on the rope anymore. And like, so if I was going to fall off, it was going to be when you got to the top. So every time I got to the top, I'd be like,
but you still rode it every time, right?
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not walking from Tomorrowland to Fantasyland. Are you out of your mind?
Well, it's like if you're going to die, you're going to die at Disneyland, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. But not really, right? Because they'll throw you out and pass the parking lot.
So you're last, and they'll be hefting you over the monorail track.
Have an oxygen tank up to your face, and then just take it off as soon as you get out of the park.
They pronounce you dead outside of the park. So technically, you didn't die in the park.
It's like the brain doesn't technically die for like 5 minutes, so let's get this guy out of here quick.
Quick. Even though like all those little sky bucket thingies looked the same, if I got one that like had a dent in it or like the paint was chipped, I always was like, man, I'm in the fucking loser. It's so funny. It was like equivalent to the faded paint chipped like Pinto or something like that. It's like they're all literally the exact same, but if I gotten one that just looked a little bit disheveled, I was disappointed the entire
time. I got the busted one.
They're looking at me right now. Those people are looking at my stupid vehicle. That's all fucked up.
That guy can't even get a good bucket. Such trash.
Every camera down on the ground is all aimed at your bucket.
Yeah.
So embarrassing. Mom, we have to go home now.
Let's go. God, the internet wasn't a thing back then. Holy shit.
Al Gore hadn't invented it yet.
Nope, thank God.
Man, bear, pig.
Anyway, thank you for listening to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. As always, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to the both of you. I love you both so much, and we will be back same time next week, and I cannot be more excited. I love every second of you boys, and I will be so sad when I gotta go to sleep tonight knowing that I'm not talking to you.
Aww.
Thank you for listening, and you have a wonderful week. You are the best.